And as we finished chapter 14, we found out that the land had rest from war. And that's not the first time that we've read that statement. But kind of shifting gears here, as you realize, I'm sure, we're going to be coming into the allotment where each individual tribe gets its own territory. And we talked just a little bit about this, how the allotment worked last Wednesday. And I don't know if there was some confusion or not. Maybe it was just me that was confused. But the way that I understand that the allotment would work is that the head of the tribe, if it's Judah, which is the tribe that we're going to be talking about tonight, the patriarch, the head of the tribe of Judah at the time, would receive the allotment. And then all the heads of family within that family, that tribe, would each receive an allotment. And then down the line. So it wasn't just the way I visualize it. It wasn't just one person saying, okay, Bill, you get this section over here. And Ron, you get this section over here next to Bill. And then so on and so forth. That would be very exhausting, wouldn't it? For one person to have to do all of that. So they shared the work. And it's a seniority kind of system where everyone got their particular allotment. So now, Dean's not here tonight. Dean is here tonight. Ted's not here tonight. He showed me how to get the map up on the screen. But I see, I have the map on the computer. Ted, how do I?
Just double click on it.
Just double click on the screen itself?
Yeah, just double click on the map.
Come on, you can do it.
No, Ted's going to come up here and help me.
All right.
So I've got it up over here. This is the one I want.
Okay, let's...
He just shut the whole thing
off. All right, so we're going to hit the play button here.
Okay.
So, now remember, you have two halves of the map here, so
right.
You can just back up to have the
top. You use
half
the delete button.
Delete button, and, the, okay. And then the enter button will go between the two.
All right, thank you. Okay, that's the one I want. All right, so we have our little roadmap tonight. Which tribe's territory is described beginning in chapter 15, verses 1 through 12? Well, which one?
Judah.
Okay, thank you. Yes, indeed. So I'm going to read the first 12 verses, which describes Judah's allotment. Now the lot for the tribe of the sons of Judah, according to their families, reached the border of Edom, southward to the wilderness of Zin at the extreme south. And their border, south border, was from the lower end of the Salt Sea, from the bay that returns to the south. So the Salt Sea is this, the Dead Sea, we call it today. The Bible calls it the Salt Sea. Then it proceeds southward to the ascent of Akrabim and continued to Zin and then went up the south of Kadesh Barnea and continued to Hezron and went up to Adar and turned about to Karkara. And it continued to Asmon and proceeded to the brook of Egypt, and the border ended at the sea. This shall be your south border. So I don't know if you could follow all of that, but I think this is being the south border down here,
of course.
Maps are terrific, aren't they? And the sea, and the east border has the Salt Sea as far as the mouth of the Jordan. And the border of the north side from the bay of the sea at the mouth of the Jordan. Then the border went up to Beth Hogla and continued on the north of Beth Arabah. And the border went up to the stone of Bohan, the son of Reuben. And the border went up to Debir from the valley of Achor and turned northward towards Gilgal, which is the opposite of the ascent of Adunamim, which is on the south of the valley. And the border continued to the waters of Ishishmish, and it ended at Enrogel. Then the border went up to the valley of Ben-Hinnom, to the slope of the Jebusite on the south, that is, Jerusalem. And the border went up to the top of the mountain, which is before the valley of Hinnom, to the west, which is at the end of the valley, Rephaim, towards the north. And from the top of the mountain, the border curved to the spring of the waters of Nephthota, and proceeded to the cities of Mount Ephron, and then the border curved to Bela, that is, Kiriath-Jearim. And the border turned about from Bela westward to Mount Seir, and continued to the slope of Mount Jearim on the north, that is, Chesalon, and went down to Beth-Shemesh, and continued through Timnah. And the border proceeded to the side of Ekron northward, and then the border curved to Shikaron, and continued to Mount Baal, and proceeded to Jabneel, and the border ended at the sea. And the west border was at the great sea, even its coastline. This is the border around the sons of Judah, according to their families. Okay, so that's a lot of reading, and it describes what the map shows. I notice it on this map. We have a big chunk of Philistia in there between the Great Sea and Judah. So I don't know what to think about that. I don't know what to say about it either. But anyway, to recap what I just read from verses 1 through 4 describes the south border of Judah. Verse 5, the east border, the Salt Sea, the Dead Sea. And verses 5 through 11, the north border. And in verse 12, the west border, which is the Great Sea. So, who divided, or who is described, starting in verse 13?
Caleb.
Thank you. Ron, would you read us about Caleb, verses 13 through 15, please?
And unto Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, he gave a part among the children of Judah, according to the commandment of the Lord to Joshua, even the city of Arad, a father of Anak, which city is Hebron. And Caleb drove hence the three sons of Anak, Shisha, and Ahiman, and Talmai, the children of Anak. And he went up hence to the inhabitants of Debir, and the name of Debir before was Karjish Sephor.
Okay, thank you. So, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, what tribe is he a member of?
Judah.
Judah, tribe of Judah. He has a portion among the sons of Judah, according to the command of Jehovah to Joshua. So it wasn't just Joshua's idea, or he didn't assign the portion, did he? It's scripted by Jehovah God. So what did Caleb do? What was the first thing he needed to do?
Drive out three sons.
Okay, he had to drive out the sons of Anak. And what do we know about the sons of Anak? What are they called?
Giants.
They're called giants.
Anak.
They are the Anakim. They are very tall, very great warriors. Probably our most famous Anakim would be
Goliath.
Goliath of Gath. Okay. So, did he describe the three sons there? Shishai, Ahiman, and Telamai, the children of Anak. So, after Caleb was done doing that, what did he do next?
He went up to the inhabitants of Debir.
He went up to Debir. Okay, so what's he going to be doing up in Debir, you suppose? Well, there are Anakin up there, aren't there? So he is about to take care of them. Sometimes this study is confusing for me because we get repeats of things in several different places, excuse me. So I have to make sure that this isn't something new. If it is it new or is it a repeat of something that we've always already heard? So it's repeated several times in Joshua and Deuteronomy and Numbers. So to kind of get things you know, on the right path, at least for myself, I went to Numbers 13 and at 33. And the question I ask myself is, what is said about the sons of Anak? Well, this is here in Numbers. This is when the spies came back from spying out Canaan land. And the spies described the Anakin in this way. They said, "We became like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight." So they were a formidable foe. In Deuteronomy chapter 9 and verse 2, the children of Israel, or the spies, say, "Who can stand before the sons of Anak? They have a reputation. They're fierce warriors." And then in Joshua chapter 11 and verse 22, we read that there are no Anakin left in the land. Well, here we are in chapter 15, and lo and behold, Caleb has to deal with Anakin. So there's a little overlap here, isn't there? There's a repeat going on. Maybe a further description of what's happening. So, question number 3. What did Caleb offer for services rendered? In verses 16 through 17, I see Jane is turning to that. Would you read us verses 16 and 17, please?
Caleb said, "The one who attacks Beth Sefer and captures it, I will give him Asha, my daughter, as wife." And Othniel, son of Kenaz, the brother of Caleb, captured it. So he gave him Asha, his daughter, as a wife.
Okay, thank you. So what did he do? Or what were the services?
He
Excuse me. My head's all muddled up. I've been working in a trash fire all day, so I'm kind of all mixed up. So, as Jane read, Caleb offered something for services rendered. And what did he offer?
His daughter.
He offered his daughter, Akshat, as a wife. So, question number four, what was the service Caleb requested, and who rendered it?
To kill that man?
Yeah.
Kill that.
Okay.
Kill that man.
So in verse 17, we see that Caleb offers his daughter as wife to the person who will attack and capture the city of Kiriath Sefer. And who steps forward and does the deed? Othniel, son of Kenaz. What do we know about Othniel? Have we run across him before? Or actually, the better question is Kenaz, the son of Kenaz.
In Numbers 32?
Maybe Numbers 32, but we do run into him in Judges chapter 1 and verse 13. And Kenaz is actually Caleb's younger brother. And furthermore, in Judges chapter 3 and verse 9, we find out that this same Othniel becomes the first judge to deliver the children of Israel. So, you know, when Joshua dies, he leaves a hole there, someone to lead the nation. Well, God does not set forth one person to lead the nation. He sets forth a series of judges to take care of the Israelites nation, leading the nation and helping to solve the problem. So, on question number five, I say, what's the rest of the story? You remember Paul Harvey? Yeah. If you're not old enough to remember Paul Harvey, you missed out on a really good newscaster. He was really interesting to listen to. And he would always bring you up so far in a news story, and then he would break for some kind of a comment, a commercial or whatever. And he said, in a moment, the rest of the story. And so now we want to know the rest of the story on what's up with Othniel and his new wife. And we're going to figure that out in verses 18 and 19. Lenny, would you read verses 18 and 19 for us in chapter 15?
It came about that when she came to him, she persuaded him to ask her father for a field. So she alighted from the donkey, and Caleb said to her, what do you want? And she said, give me a blessing, since you have given me the land of Negri, give me also springs of water. So he gave her the upper springs and the lower springs.
Okay, thank you. So now, Caleb's daughter, Akshah, is wife of Othniel. And what's the rest of the story here? What does she do?
She asked for land.
She asked for land.
And the springs.
Okay. All right. So it says she persuaded him. Now, wait a minute here.
He gave her land in the desert. And she needed some water to provide the land, so she asked for water. some springs now.
Yeah, for some reason or other, I got this all backed around in my mind the other day when I was going through it. When she came to Othniel, says she persuaded him to ask her father for a field. And I see it doesn't read that way now.
Yeah. Look at verse 18.
Okay, so that was a point that I wanted to make, actually. Yeah, thank you. Why?
She's saying that she persuaded Othniel to ask her father for the
land? Yeah, yeah, and then it switches around to where there's a conversation between she and her father. So I asked myself, why didn't she just go to her father in the first place? Why did she tell her husband to go ask my father? Because it says she's persuaded him, like he wasn't going to go do it. He's just going to be satisfied with what he had.
Maybe it wasn't her place.
And on top of that, doesn't Othniel have his own land? He would have his own land, wouldn't he? So now he has a wife, the daughter of a very important person, and he has this dry country, which Ron was describing. The Negev is a dry, arid land, and then you need water, don't you? So that's pretty important. And we haven't read verse 19 yet. Or yeah, we guess we did too. When Akshah goes to talk to her father, she says, "Give me a blessing." Well, certainly water would be a blessing, Bill.
Also, in mind, at the very end of the verse 18, she's speaking to Caleb. She got down off of her ass and said to Caleb, he said to her, "What wouldst thou?" And she said to him, "Give me a blessing." She's talking for that thou hast set me in the land of the south. She's talking to Caleb.
Yes. Yeah, she is.
She doesn't go and talk to her father directly.
Well,
Caleb
talked to God.
Well, time out. If we go through it, look at the syntax and everything. She goes to her husband, Othniel, and says, "Go ask my father for this." And then the conversation switches to, here's the daughter talking to her dad. And so I was just curious, you know, why is it that way? Say what? What?
Maybe she didn't want to come off as overly greedy. Maybe the land and she asked for the water.
So I looked at it this way: as Othniel has his own land, wherever it is, it's in the south there in the Negev, and it's a dry land, and so he's not in a situation where he can go to Caleb and say, "Hey, I need some water. Give me some more land." But his daughter, that's a whole different ball game, isn't it? Daughters can go to fathers anytime and ask for anything. And Caleb did what most fathers would do. She said, "Give me springs of water." She didn't say, or did she say, "Land, give me land"?
No.
Give me.
She asked for springs of water. She asked her husband to ask for the land.
"For you have given me a south land, and given me also springs of water." So she had the south land. Now she just needed water to go with the land.
Okay. So my major confusion was why she didn't go to her father all by herself. But at any rate, he gave her the upper and lower springs, wherever those are in the Negev. That's what she got, which would include the land, wouldn't it? Dean?
But remember, this is a patriarchal society. The land did not belong to her. the land belonged to her husband.
Right,
and it stayed with her husband's family. It was not her land. It was his land. Now, Caleb may have given it to her, but because she's married, it's his land.
Okay.
And that was the problem you had with Zelophehad's daughters. Remember, their husbands died, and they could not hold on to the land. So they married their cousins, essentially. They had to marry within the tribe, or the land would have gone outside of the tribe.
Okay. And they couldn't do that. They couldn't allow that to happen. All right. I hope you all are not totally confused. I think we've got it nailed down. Okay, moving on to verse 20 then. So this is the inheritance of the tribe of the sons of Judah according to their families. So the rest of the chapter down to verse 62 is a description of the names, a list of names, and what they received. And I'm not going to read that, and I'm not going to ask anyone else to read it too, either, I mean. But I've summarized it. First off, what does verse 20 say that the next 41 verses records? Well, I just told you. It's the allotment given to whom? The people. So in verse 21, we have a description of the cities at the extremities toward the border of Eden. And Eden, you know, is on the east side. So that description lasts clear down through verse 33. In the lowlands, they received 29 cities. So in verse 32, there's a list of 29 cities which these individuals received. And the interesting thing that reached out to me was they received these cities with their villages. So what you have is a little serfdom here. You have the head of a family has a city with surrounding villages. And why would an arrangement like a city be set up like that? Bill?
There were a whole lot of kings. And if they had a big city, that originally was powerful. The little cities surrounding them would be a part of that conglomeration.
Okay, so in time of distress or need, or if there's an attack, people from the little villages run to the larger city. They also, that's where they take their produce. That's where their commerce takes place. So you have a little kind of city-state arrangement, and a lot of them. So it turns out we have them in the lowlands. Besides the cities at the extremities, towards the borders, we have them also in the lowlands. We have them in Ekron. We have them listed in Ashdod. We have them listed in the hill country in verse 48. And then in verse 62, we have the list is completed in the wilderness. Cities with their villages. So if you went through those verses that we pretty much skipped, there are 112 cities with their villages involved in this allotment. Bill again?
The problem with Philistia on the map there and what you just spoke of at the end, those are all part of the Philistine territory. It's Ekron and Ashdod and all of them. Judah never fully took possession of the Philistines. It was never within the borders of Judah. And so it's not shown as part of Judah.
Okay.
And as we go down through all these, I've already read all of this distribution the last day or two. some of the other families, it said there were groups of people within them that they were not able to drive out. And but it's still shown as their color on the map because it's within their borders. This was a problem that God spoke of before the land was ever distributed. If you don't drive these people out, they're going to cause you problems, and that's exactly what happens.
Yes, indeed. And I don't believe any one of the tribes successfully drove out all of the inhabitants. Each tribe had a few hangers-on, so to speak, that turned out to be a thorn in their side. Now, this map kind of threw me sideways because it doesn't match the map that's in my Bible for the same time period. My map shows that that Judah and Simeon absorbed the land that they show as being Philistia. So I don't know what to say about that. It would take a pretty good scholar to get all that perfectly mapped out. So I'm not even going to try to go there. Way beyond my ability. So, and verse 63, I asked the question, what about the Jebusites? Because verse 63 says, now as for the Jebusites, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the sons of Judah could not drive them out. So the Jebusites lived with the sons of Judah at Jerusalem until this day. And we're going to find out that term until this day extends for quite a little while. I did some scratching around to try to determine who the Jebusites are. And I found that they are a small tribe. They're inhabitants of the hill country of Canaan. And they're described as members of a mountain tribe of Canaan. They live in and around the city of Jerusalem. In verse 63, we find the sons of Judah could not drive them out. If we move on through the Old Testament a little bit, we find in Judges chapter 1 and verse 21, the sons of Benjamin did not drive them out of Jerusalem, that is. Now, the Jebusites are first encountered in our study in Joshua 10, verse 1. Adoni-Zedek, king of Jerusalem, was a Jebusite. And you remember that was one of the kings, the five kings that warred against the Israelites in the early running there in chapter 10. And if we move a little further in the Old Testament, in 2 Samuel chapter 5 and verse 6, we find that the Jebusites are still in Jerusalem at the time of David. When David is king, the Jebusites are still in Jerusalem. So what about the Jebusites? That's about all I know about the Jebusites. Any comments or anyone like to add anything to that? Okay, moving on. We're moving into chapter 16 now. The first question is, whose territory is described in chapter 16? We find that in verses 1 through 3. Frank, would you read us verses 1 through 3?
This is the land the tribe of Joseph received. It started at the Jordan River near Jericho. It continued to the waters of Jericho just east of the city. The border went up went up from Jericho to the mountains of Bethel. Then it continued from Bethel, also called Luz, to the Arkite border at from the, there it went west to the border of Japhelites.
Yep.
Okay. It continued to the area of the lower Beth Horon. Then it went to, oh boy, Gerez.
My book says Gezer.
At the sea.
Okay, thank you. So the question is, whose territory is being described in these three verses?
It says Joseph and children.
The sons of Joseph, okay. And as we, we're going to read on, is we're going to find that it specifically deals with Joseph's son Ephraim. Okay, in verse 5. So, question number 9, what else did the sons of Ephraim receive besides what Frank just read to us? So the sons of Joseph, Manasseh and Ephraim, received their inheritance. Now this is the territory, or this was the territory of the sons of Ephraim according to their families. The border of their inheritance eastward was Ashtaroth Edar, as far as upper Beth Horon. Then the border went westward at Michepkalath on the north, and the border turned about eastward to Tanamath Shiloh and continued beyond it to the east of Genoa. And it went down from Genoa to Ataroth, and to Nanara, and then reached Jericho and came out at the Jordan. From Tapawa, the border continued westward to the brook of Cana, and it ended at the sea. This is the inheritance of the tribe of the sons of Ephraim, according to their families, together with cities which were set apart for the sons of Ephraim, in the midst of the inheritance of the sons of Manasseh, all the cities with their villages. So we see there that their inheritance includes, together with cities, includes cities set apart in the midst of the inheritance of the sons of Manasseh. So we have the physical description of the land of Ephraim. You see it on the map there. And there again, my Bible map doesn't look anything like that. But that makes no difference as far as our study goes. But the thing that kind of jumped out at me was that they also received cities in the land of the tribes of Manasseh, cities with their villages there again. So any comment on that? Do you find that strange, interesting? Question mark? Not really. They're just people after all, aren't they? Okay, moving on. And this is kind of a, chapter 16 is kind of a short chapter. Oh, there we go. I apologize for being so disorganized tonight. Anyway, verse 10, and question 10. Anything more about this tribe? Well, in verse 10, oh, I see why I'm all befuddled. The rest of it is just a continued description of the land, the borders. Oh, well, there we go. I got to tell you, my eyes aren't focusing right because there is only 10 verses in. I was looking at 17. Okay. I'm back on track here. Verse 10. But they did not drive out the Canaanites who lived in Gezer. So the Canaanites live in the midst of Ephraim to this day, and they became forced laborers. So that's the anything more, isn't it? They did not drive out the Canaanites. This is getting to be pretty repetitive. They did not drive out the Canaanites who lived in Gezer. They live there to this day. They became forced labor. Your King James Bible would say that they served under tribute to the Ephraimites.
Well,
yeah.
Excuse me. You mentioned this before. Was the situation that they couldn't drive them out, or was the situation, and I'm not sure we know the answer to this, the situation that they got enough land, they managed to subdue enough so that they were comfortable, and they just kind of didn't complete the job. So it doesn't really say in every case. And given what happens later, we know that there were vast tracts of land that they had not driven the people out of, and Joshua had to come back to them and say, look, you know, you've got your land, now it's time to go fight for your brothers. So I get the impression that maybe they just got tired of fighting, settled down, built their houses, and figured we'll live with what we've got.
Or we'll deal with it later if something goes a little sideways.
Deal with it later, yeah. But they didn't complete the job. One way or another, whether they were unable to complete the job, which I kind of doubt, because God has shown an ability to drive out the people before them, or they just got tired of trying. They had good land, they were happy, and just decided to quit.
You know, I don't think that's ever happened to me before in my life. I built my own house, and I'm still living in an unfinished house, and we've been in it for 45 years. You know, it's not that I can't do it. It's, you know, you get comfortable, don't you?
Hey, it's got a bathroom wall. That's all that matters.
Sure. Maybe to you, but maybe Kim might have a different idea.
We're not going to talk about
that. Okay. Yeah, and I think what Dean says is a very valid point, that people, you can do it, but are the returns worth the reward sometimes? And then you get down the road a ways and you find out, well, maybe I should have followed through and done the right thing.
Don't misunderstand. I'm not saying that I know
what
the situation was.
Yeah.
But given what happens later, it would make sense to me that may be the situation that they're describing. Hey,
sure.
We got the toilet.
Yeah.
You know, we really don't. We got the toilet, we got the bathtub. We really don't need a shower curtain.
Yeah, we can survive. Lenny?
You think about it, God expected the children of Israel to take all the land. And they decided it wasn't a good idea. And as we look down in history, we see it was today the Bible.
Yeah, that was God's desire. Ebony, before you leave. Ebony? How's your mother doing?
I'm gratefully today and she's doing okay.
She's doing all right. She came through her surgery and everything okay then.
Oh, that. Oh, yeah. That came.
Okay, terrific. Good. Glad to hear that. Okay. Well, I'm going to cut the class off right here. I hope you all don't mind too much. So next time, maybe we'll stay an extra 10 minutes to make up for it.